From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show. All right, good evening, afternoon, morning, everybody. It's the latest episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am John, and I'm hosting, which means Hunter is not here. And Stu's a bit exhausted, but he's going to do the show. He's a trooper. He's going to stick with this. Stu, down in Australia, say hello, sir.
Hello, and imagine the shock of everyone listening going, John, he's only ever done one hosting before in the past ever, I think. But yeah, I am pretty effing tired. So I said, John, could you please take the reins and run it tonight? He was like, sure. So hello, everyone.
All right. And joining us from Los Angeles is Mr. Eric Zaldiver.
Thanks for having me on. Hello, hello.
And returning to the show, so I guess the last one was the Mallrats episode, is from the Parts Unknown in Florida. With a pocket full of Bitcoin, Garo Nagosian.
And I'm also one of the few people who can tell the difference between Hunter and John's voice.
I'm so glad.
Does that mean you're transitioning into a woman? That means you're transitioning Garo into a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay.
Of course. Why not? I mean, everyone else is doing it now. It's the new goth. Transitioning is the new goth, so
hey,
might as well do it.
Jamie Lee Curtis's kid just transitioned, and she's very happy about it. So, well, whatever.
That's what she says.
She's hermaphrodite. So.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah. Like mother, like daughter, son, whatever it is.
It's the proper term is it.
Trends or Z. That's what they are.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, I shouldn't have laughed.
I should go ahead and kick us into this because there's going to be a lot to toss around with this. Our movie tonight is the cult classic, believe it or not, Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, 1991, starring Mickey Rourke and Don Johnson. Yep. And who picked this? Because it was not me.
It was Garrett.
I did. Yeah. I did.
Okay.
Because Stuart was thinking about between like two 90s black movies, and we all knew that if that happened, it would be John doing his impression of Anthony Cumia around 2014. So, you know, I figured, you know, we wanted to make this episode that's not behind a paywall. So let's do something, you know, more interesting.
Yeah, we're not Patreoning yet.
Yeah.
So didn't need that. We'll cover Lowdown Dirty Shame on another episode.
Do we do we stick that Fight for Your Life episode on the Patreon when it happens?
I don't know.
I waited a year to hear that laugh. I've waited forever. Yeah, that was sitting on my desktop when I was doing some work on the other computer downstairs last night. That Fight for Your Life, I'm like, oh, that's pretty rancid. That episode, I mean, it's full on. It should be never released. Yeah, it should never be released.
That episode is so old. Hunter was single when we recorded.
Oh, he was in between. He was on the dating scene and hadn't met his wife at the time. Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Shit, when was that? That was about 2016. We did it 17.
Yes,
I think so. Yeah, the great unaired episode.
It's like
there's a reason for that. Day the Clown Cried.
Actually, there's another unaired episode, and I'm on it too. It's the Red Dead Redemption 2 episode that me and Hunter did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where the hell is that?
And honestly, I'm not to blame for that. I want everyone to know I'm not to blame. Hunter did a bunch of asides that he needs to edit out. That he's like, this isn't going in the episode. Garo, let me tell you this. So, like, you remember how I got blamed for what was the name of the movie? The Mel Gibson, Vince Vaughn
Drive
movie.
Across Concrete.
I was blamed for that one taking a while to come out. I am not to blame for Red Dead Redemption 2.
I thought I'd never hear those words. I'm not to blame for that one. Coming from Garrow.
Yep, I'm not to blame. I'm innocent. The one time I'm innocent, that's it.
It's actually Hunter's nightmare, because when he knows that you and I are on together, Garrow, he's like slight panic attacks, especially if he's editing. Because he knows if he's got to edit it, it's a nightmare. And if he gives it to me, Lord knows, I could probably just put it out uncut and go, I can't be bothered cutting it. So either way, he doesn't win.
Honestly, I thought the reason he wasn't going to be on tonight was because you guys were going to do a black.
No. We were going to, he actually said from the offset that he couldn't make it tonight. So I said, oh, well, let's do an urban. I just threw out an idea. Let's do some urban film. Then I was thinking, I can't think enough. And then I knew that we wanted to have you on. And I asked you, and you were like, oh. Then you said, Harley Davidson, the Marlboro Man. Yeah, perfect. Let's do that. We talked about it anyway.
Honestly, it's a good choice because the director's Australian. He actually directed one of John's favorite underrated movies, The Phantom. And he also worked with the greatest man ever in Australia twice on Lightning Jack and Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles.
Did he do Lightning Jack? Was that him?
Yeah, he did. Yep, he directed Lightning Jack.
Oh, shit. That film was bad. Oh. I actually thought of that film the other day because the guy I mentioned on one of the episodes, which is Paul Hogan's best friend from since forever, died the other week. And Lightning Jack. Wow. Saw that at the drive-in when it came out in 95 or 94, whatever it was. Not fun.
Not as bad as Kangaroo Jack.
I never saw it. I got that much shit over, Stuart, Kangaroo Jack. I said, I'm not watching this film. I'm principal. I will not watch it. You can shove up your ass. So,
some people call Lightning Jack one of the greatest westerns of all time.
They do not, you shit stirrer. Shut up. I'll tell you now, you can all laugh about Kangaroo Jack, but until you have driven through the back streets of here in Melbourne, where I'm at night, as I do with work, and there are roos, we call kangaroos, but we call them roos, that are the size of a fucking house at the side of the road. You just think, oh no, are they going to jump out in the front of the car? They're going to hit the... Those bastards are scary. They are not pleasant creatures at all. And especially when... I mean, just a quick story. I was going through one road. I was trying to read the maps on because it was the back roads. And it's kind of like... So I'm driving through this. I missed the turnoff, and the turnoff was about 30 feet back. I'm like, oh, shit, I've gone too far. I had to back up. And I kid you not, about 15 feet away was about 10 gang crews. It was like driving through. Remember the Wanderers? You know, when they go through the area where the Ducky Boys is? You know, Yeah. It was like that, but with kangaroos instead. And I was like, oh, shit, am I going to get attacked? So I had to floor it in reverse and just hit that side street and get out of there. They are some big motherfuckers. When they get in their hind legs, they're a good 8 feet tall. I'm not kidding. They are just monsters.
Imagine hitting that animal when you're in the car. I mean, that's what, 200 pounds?
Oh, easy. Easy. And they're strong as. I mean, you just watch videos of kangaroos. They are fucking strong. But anyway, we're not talking about kangaroos.
Yeah, in Australia, they say running over kangaroos is a good practice for running over humans.
Yeah, it's an old proverb, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least he didn't say the A word, Garrow.
Well, you know, people can put connected dots.
Yeah. I've still got that dangerous people poster you gave me. I found it when I was doing the clear out from the shed. I was like, oh no. I just read it. I just laughed when I read what you wrote on it. But I won't repeat it here, otherwise we're in trouble. All right, John, please. Let's keep moving.
All right. Interesting thing about it's directed by Simon Wenzer, who is a Australian director and a bit of a journeyman director, and was a top studio choice to direct westerns here in America. He did quite a few for cable TV. He directed, Lonesome Dove. God, Lonesome Dove, Monty Walsh, which is a really good TV Western.
Did he do Quigley as well? Quigley Down Under? I think that
was he did Quigley Down Under, the Walmart staple of Mark and Ben DVDs.
Oh, really?
Always on Pluto TV as well. apparently, got to start doing a lot of Aussie TV.
The film we're discussing today is also a staple in the bargain bins of Walmart.
Yes, it is.
On DVD or Blu-ray?
I haven't seen it in a while, but that's how I was introduced to the movie, just as a DVD. For years and years and years, it would just show up in bargain bins. Okay. And I never knew what it was. I never picked it up because Mickey Rourke looked like Bruce Willis. I always thought it was just Bruce Willis. I didn't bother looking at who was in the film.
Yeah.
And it just looked like some boomer road movie or something, so I never was interested in it. But you guys mentioned it in some show recently, and I was just like, oh, it's on HBO Max. I guess I'll give it a look.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Miami Vice episode. That's where I got the idea to actually, do it, yeah.
Yeah, well, boy, was I surprised what it was. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's like a cyberpunk Western or something.
Yeah, that's what really took me by surprise, was it's like what, near dystopian, or what is? It's the United States is run by a bank, which, you know, not much difference in reality, but and like Burbank has become a central hub in the United States. So weird. It's a strange film.
Yes.
Hey, Eric, just a question. How far are you from Burbank? Because you're in California now, right?
I'm one canyon passage away. I can be there in 5 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay, that quick. Yeah. Okay. Are you near Ventura Boulevard?
Yeah, it depends on what you mean by near. A 15-minute drive in Los Angeles is a 45-minute one.
Oh, okay. Because I was actually, when I was in Los Angeles 10 years ago, I was on Ventura Boulevard staying there overnight. And that was scary enough, one night there in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you're not too far from where I'm at. Oh. Or you were. You weren't, I should say.
Yeah. I walked from the hotel I was staying at, which had a Denny's next door, so I had breakfast there the next day. But I walked, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes up the road and was in Inglewood. And, yeah, a friend of mine who's from California, who's now in Texas, he rang me up. Because I just bought a phone. I needed to buy a portable phone, like a disposable one for the time I was going to be in America for that month. And gave up my number, and he rings me up, and I told him the story. He goes, "What the fuck are you doing going to Inglewood?" He goes, "How are you still alive?" So I don't know. I needed a phone. I don't know. Didn't know the area.
Yeah, I don't work too far from Inglewood. I work at this pretty prestigious camera house, and I forgot to mention on our Death Wish 4 video or podcast, that scene where they're in the oil rig area shooting it out, the mafia, the two gangs. I pass by that every single day.
I'll do you one better. I pass by every day the Halls of Justice from Mad Max. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's the Halls of Justice. Is that the police station where it's just like it's basically some ex-mill or something like that? Okay.
It's actually a science museum now. I think it was back then. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, this gave me some Mad Max vibes, actually, just because Mad Max is sort of like society on the collapse, and this sort of felt like that a little bit. I was very surprised by the setting.
Yeah. This is the start of Mickey Rourke just starting to fuck up his face with the plastic surgery. He was still presentable here.
He still looks human. He still looks human.
He does, yeah.
He, for years on the cover, he looked just like Bruce Willis to me. I didn't even
realize it. It's very similar.
The part was offered to Bruce Willis before Mickey accepted it.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
Okay, 91, he'd have been doing Die Hard 2, wouldn't he, at the time?
Yeah, more than likely. He was friends with Don Johnson, according to the IMDb trivia, and this was sort of this was supposed to be a reunion for them because Bruce Willis made his on-camera debut in a Miami Vice episode.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was his big debut. I not counting supposedly as a very small part in, I think it's that Paul Newman legal thriller or David Mamet movie or whatever it is.
Did anybody spot the?
Abel Ferrara claims that he's in Driller Killer for like a second.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he claims.
Did anybody spot the little nod to Bruce Willis in the film?
Yeah, Die Hardest 5.
Die Hardest V, yeah, 5, yeah.
Yeah.
So as I was thinking,
only took 10 more years to happen, I guess.
Is there a Die Hard 5 or not?
There is.
Yeah, there is.
Oh boy,
it's in Russia.
Came out in 2012, I think, 2013.
Oh boy,
it's terrible. It was awful.
It was memory hold 2 months later because it flopped, I think.
Yeah.
Jeez, I haven't even seen the fourth one. I've only seen the first three. That was it. Which one's the best of the Die Hards, Garrow?
One.
No, not three.
No, not three. Oh, I don't care. I'll be perfectly honest. I don't care for any of the other diehards except for one. I'm the only one I think that's a good movie.
Yeah. More interesting question, which of the sequels is the best?
Two.
Which of the sequels?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm going with two as well, Stu.
Yeah.
I have to watch.
I enjoy two.
I'd have to watch two again. I remember that year there were two Rennie Harlan movies that came out. It was Die Hard 2 and Adventures of Fort Fairlane. I liked Adventures of Fort Fairlane way
Oh,
more.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a better movie.
Four is underrated and three is overrated. Good lord, that movie sucks.
I thought Gary,
yeah, it's bad.
Gary, I thought you would like the third one for Bruce Willis with a sandwich board.
Yeah, that's the best scene in the movie. Yeah,
of course
that's
like it is.
The best scene in
it. It's the only scene that does something different because the rest of it is just emulating that Dirty Harry, that sequence of Dirty Harry who's running around answering the phones. Or, you know, or Scorpio kills the girl. It's just that stretched to unbearable lengths with Willis and Samuel Jackson, who have no real chemistry on screen. It's a dull movie with no real villain and no real confrontation with the villain.
Mickey Rourke and Don Johnson had way more chemistry than
Bruce agree.
And Sam Jackson.
Yeah, I agree. I think Sam Jackson's political views got in the way of his chemistry with Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Probably.
very likely. But the thing about this film is I think it was a bomb when it was released, but
huge bomb.
But it was a hit on home video. And I think it's just because it was mismarketed. Because if you look at the poster, it looks like a road comedy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what got me.
It doesn't look like
poster.
An action film. And I don't even think the trailers indicated it was a big action movie.
The cover is what kept me, and the title, let's be honest, is what kept me from watching this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The cover of the DVD cover or the actual theatrical poster? The theatrical poster is way better.
Well, I don't know if they're one and the same. I don't know if I've even actually seen the theatrical poster, but the DVD cover in the bargain bins that I saw for years, like I said, I just thought it was some like boomer wet dream or something.
They're the same. It's like I thought it was a comedy like The Cowboy Way or something like that, which I didn't see either.
Yeah, it kept me. I was just like doubled over with surprise about what this movie actually was.
It's very 91 action. It's very you could watching it, you could be like, yeah, this is early 90s action movie.
For
know, it has all the tropes like tits, you know. It feels like a Joel Silver movie, even though Joel Silver had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's basically just testosterone on overload because it's all the guys are masculine and all the women are just pretty much naked. Pretty much all of them.
My favorite part of it is has Giancarlo Esposito in the movie, who's Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, and he's getting all upset because of some blue meth shit that's coming in. And I'm like, wow, it's like predicted his role on Breaking Bad, this movie.
It's got Tom Sizemore, who usually does a slow Mickey Rourke impression, doing it in this film. Doing his first slow Mickey Rourke impression.
It's funny. I didn't even know it was Tom Sizemore for like the first 15 minutes he was on screen. I'm like, who's that guy? He looks familiar.
Because he's so clean cut and undestroyed by drugs at the time.
Actually, fun fact, all those drugs that Mickey Rourke and Don Johnson accidentally steal was Tom Sizemore's pay for this film.
Very likely.
Or was part of it. Yeah. There was still more to come. But, Eric, you were saying you didn't know what to expect from this when you watched it. So what did you think of it?
After I heard you guys talk about it on the previous show, I had an idea that my idea of it for the past whatever 15 years has been incorrect. So I knew going in I was not going to get what I had originally expected, but I was still surprised by the setting. Again, it takes place, in some not too distant future where everything has kind of gone really bad. So that was a surprise. I just didn't. What did I think of it? I enjoyed it. I maybe would watch it one other time in my life. I'm glad that there was a bunch of good looking ladies in it. Tia Carrera is one of my favorites, of course. You can't have this kind of movie without Tia Carrera, and she looks really young in this.
Yeah,
it was the year before Wayne's World.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the only reason I even have some shit like Showdown in Little Tokyo is because of Tia Carrera.
Oh, really?
Actually, it's the only reason to really own it. She looks even younger in that than she does in this. Actually,
she hasn't aged well. The Wall has come and gotten her.
She could have been fine, I think. I mean, I really don't know, but I'm pretty sure she would have been a hell of a lot better off had she not listened to her agent or whoever told her to get the Botox and the plastic surgery. Why do they always do that? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. You're not going to look like you're in your 20s when you're 50-something years old. It's just not going to happen.
There's no
magic drug for that.
I'll tell you, in my opinion, of the two Asian women in this film, between Tia Carrera and the one at the gas station.
Kelly Hu.
Yeah. She's way better.
From Marsha Law and Seton Chang's old classmate.
Yeah, that's true.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine went to school with her in Hawaii. Oh,
God. She is.
And, of course, he was the first one to tell me she was lying about her age because she was. Because she was older than me. And Kelly Hu was constantly claiming she was only 30 or, you know, or 25 or something. It was pretty funny.
Okay. Maybe she can get away with it. Because I remember she was on Nash Bridges as well with Don Johnson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was on Martial Law with Sammo Hung, the Sammo Hung TV show.
Yeah, that's true.
Martial Law. I think I saw that one, yeah. What,
they did a couple crossovers with Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, what's some thoughts on this film, you guys?
I thought the action sequences could have been a little bit better.
There is one moment in the movie that I actually, when I was like, "Wow, that's really actually really cool action-wise." It's when they're doing the robbery of the what do you call it, the car,
armored truck,
armored truck, yeah, and the guy comes in on the fucking motorcycle and fucking does it, and they all kind of jump over it while it's on fire, and it goes into the car, and the car blows up. Like, I'm like, wow, that's actually something I'd expect to see, like, in a Hong Kong movie, not in a 90s American action film. It was actually one of the few times in the action where I was like, wow, that's actually really fucking cool. And I wish the movie had more action like that.
You know, the dude on the motorbike?
Falls into,
That dude on the motorbike was Big John Studd.
Yep.
Yeah.
The late, great Big John Studd.
Yep.
Pro wrestler and, you know, and a big dude. So that was part of the gag, was he was riding a motorcycle and he'd do that stunt.
There was one part in there. Sorry, Eric, I'll be real quick. There's one part in there where Mickey Rourke looks like he picks up Big John Studd and flips onto a table. No way he picked him up. Is that my right?
Held by wires and off-camera stuff.
I was going to say, because Big John Studd's a big fucker. And I'm sure Mickey Rourke can handle his weights, but what was that guy, 320? 330 pounds, you reckon?
He was big. He was big, and he died young. You know, I forget exactly why, like cancer from steroid use or something.
I think he died in 95, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah, so like he didn't live much longer.
Yeah.
Sorry, Eric. I'm cut out the top.
That's all right. I was just going to say that the action set pieces, they're okay locations, like that aircraft graveyard, but they didn't really make anything big. The helicopter, the Mac Bolan kind of sequence. What do you think about that, John? With the helicopter busting through, shooting the windows out.
That's the scene that was lifted by the Wachowski siblings for The Matrix. It's shot for shot. Almost every shot in it is. And there used to be a YouTube clip comparing the two scenes, but it was completely lifted for The Matrix. But it's a cool scene here. It's actually a big action highlight. It looks like where they spent a lot of their budget for the stunts. It's there. Everything else is kind of low budget motorcycle stunts and stuff, which are pretty good. But it doesn't look like a big budget action movie. But that one scene has you thinking, oh, maybe they put some money into this, you know.
Okay, I'll tell you one part where they didn't put any money into it was when At the very end, Tom Sizemore's holding on to Don Johnson's boot, and they're showing the outside of the very big building.
Yeah, it's pretty bad green screen.
That's that would have been blue screen back then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been blue screen.
Probably blue screen, yeah.
Yeah. That was have CGI to erase any discrepancies or whatever like they do now.
It was Birdemic-like,
The budget was, according to Wikipedia, which is, of course, you know, always correct, the budget was $23 million. That's not too cheap for that time.
Yeah. Would have been a fair...
For that, that's about equivalent. That's slightly more than you'd get for a Seagal movie, because a Seagal movie would be made for like $14 million or something like that. And so, that's about on par.
Yeah, and this was like MGM was the company that put it out, and they were known for just sinking a bunch of money into a bunch of bombs around that time.
Yeah, they've always been known for that for the past 35 years, it seems.
Well, they also...
And then they released a Bond movie and be bailed out.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They released Desperate Hours a year before with Mickey Rourke, MGM, and that tanked.
Oh, yeah, that was a huge tank. Anything Michael Cimino directed is flopped.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy that film, but, you know.
If it is the equivalent of a Seagal movie, then this is actually way bigger than that in terms of scope.
Yeah, I agree. It's not as good as Out for Justice with Seagal. That's his best one by a mile.
I just mean scope-wise. I just mean like, okay, they got the near-distant future thing. Like, this is stuff that Seagal wasn't touching at this point.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't mess with this until he started making movies in Russia that were shot on like an iPhone or something. Because he's done some science fiction movies. It'll star some, some guy who was in UFC for a cup of coffee or two, and then Seagal will play like the villain who turns out to be good in the end, and it has all this CGI cyberpunk stuff. And you'll look at the credits; it was shot in some former Soviet bloc or something. It's ridiculous. That's where his career is these days.
There was one film I watched many years ago of his where he was a writer. And
he did write the greatest script ever, so it's not that far
on deadly ground.
he's a great writer.
What
does it take to change the essence of a man? It takes time.
Words for the 90s, you know.
Yep.
Seagal might be the only D-list actor I can think of who's making $1 million a movie. All of those Soviet bloc movies are made for $2 million. Half of that is for Seagal.
Shit.
It goes right to the pasta bar with that money.
And the sex trafficking ring as well. Allegedly.
I think he's got 10 Russian brides or something.
Jesus.
Where he lives.
Jesus.
I mean, you can shoot movies. Like, so much... cheaper now because of digital. I mean, when you look at what the cost of like films in the 90s, when probably quarter of the budget was probably just film, buying film and developing film and all that. So now, yeah, you can make a movie for $2 million and pay Seagal $1 million and have the movie come out looking halfway decent.
Yeah.
So, Garrow, is there any plans to put Seagal into Dangerous People 2?
There's no plans for Dangerous People 2 at all.
Oh, really? Oh, what a bummer.
Yeah. No, the movie didn't make any money.
Yeah. Well,
you know, but
you got to start somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people see it, seem to like it, but it hasn't made any money. Like, I had a whole thing planned out for three other movies, but I'm like, fuck that. The only reason you go and you make another movie of a sequel or something is if it makes money, or you have a lot of money and you can throw it away. That's the only reason you do those things. So, I don't have either of those. So.
No plans.
I want to do something again, and I'm probably going to but it's going to be something different. It's going to be something different. It's not going to be Dangerous People related.
It's going to be about three obnoxious podcasters who are upset people.
It's going to be something different. It's not going to be an exploitation movie with a lot of nudity like Dangerous People was, because now people frown upon on nudity. It's like, because the whole world has gone fag.
Garrow says the world has gone fag. Okay.
But it's true, because it's like you go to any streaming, you go to any streaming thing, they will turn down your movie if it has too much nudity. And like, what is too much nudity? Who knows that? I mean, Dangerous People, yes, too much nudity. I'll cop to that. You know, I'll plead guilty to that. But like, what is too much nudity? You don't know. So it's like, if you put two sets of boobs in there, is that too much nudity? Who knows?
See, the thing is, Garrow, for me, there's no such thing as too much nudity. Smaller, never enough. Yeah,
and Netflix and all these other places, there is such a thing as too much nudity. And it's funny because when they make their own TV shows, they cram it with fucking nudity. But when you're a filmmaker and you're making a movie, if you mess with too much nudity in it, you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Is Amazon going back and cutting some stuff out from legacy movies? Like, let's say Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
I don't think they are, but I've actually checked Amazon recently. And like a lot of movies that were in my my watch list, which is a lot of independent movies and like Hong Kong movies and stuff, all off of Prime. All are off of Prime. Like it's literally
they yanked a lot.
Yeah, there's so like it's not even worth. I mean, unless you're buying stuff from Amazon all the time, Prime isn't even worth it anymore.
Yeah, it's really not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really really bad Amazon Prime now. And the problem is with a lot of these streaming services. Is they want independence at first because they don't have that much money. So they're like, oh, come on, independent people, come in. You know, like Dangerous People's on Tubi because they want the independence because Tubi needs the content. But Netflix needed the content. Actress Apocalypse, our first movie, was on Netflix. And now they're like, fuck you, independence. Amazon, you know, when they started Prime, were like, come on, independence, we love you. And then they got the content, all the content they needed. And they're like, fuck you, go off. We don't want you anymore. And now Tubi... they'll eventually do the same thing where they'll tell all the independents to go fuck themselves because that's the way the streamers work. They want you when they're starting off, and then they tell you to go fuck yourself when they're established.
Do
that's
they?
The way it works.
I'm just curious with Tubi. Do they pay you per stream, or do they pay you a percentage or like a fee up front, and then they can stream as much as they want, and you get nothing afterwards?
What it is our distributor gets it on there, and we get a cut of the. The ad revenue because it runs commercials. So
Okay. So
basically they get they get the ad revenue, they send our cut of it to my distributor, and then my distributor takes their cut, and then I get left with about a penny maybe if someone watches it. So you know, hey, you got a penny.
It's like Spotify royalties.
Yeah. So, you know, it's good because, you know, someone says, oh, you're a filmmaker. Can I see your movie? I go, yeah, you can download Tubi. It's free. You can watch it. But, you know, I'm not getting rich off of it at all. You know, people act like, oh, you're on streaming. You're going to make money. But no, it's streaming is not the answer to the independent filmmakers' woes. In fact, it's probably made it worse because now no one wants physical copies anymore. So, you know, I did a horror convention about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was brought Dangerous People, Blu-rays, DVDs, Actress Apocalypse DVDs. And then I had like a bunch of like old DVDs I was selling. And I had like a bunch of old magazines and zines I just wanted to get rid of. I put them out there for like $5 each. The only reason I made money was selling those old magazines and zines I had from like the 90s. And because I made like a bunch of money selling that shit. And I only sold one Dangerous People DVD and one Actress Apocalypse DVD. No one wants physical media anymore. It's dying a horrible death. No one wants it.
You messed up. You should have had Corn Man. You should have had Corn Man sitting with you.
I should have made the whole movie about Corn Man.
Are you really short? Yeah. Now that's where you'll be making money. Steven Seagal is Corn Man. Now that would make money.
Should have had a retro VHS package. It could be like vinyl is for music fans.
Yeah. But no one wants to buy anything. They come up and people go, oh, I'm interested in your movie. Where can I stream it?
John.
That's what it comes down to.
John, I said this to Garrow years ago. I said, why don't you make a VHS version of it and put it out for sale? Nope. Don't want to. Nobody cares about VHS. There's a site over here selling the... Any of you guys remember the documentary Killing of America from 81 or 82?
Yeah, I remember
that. Leonard Schrader. Is it Leonard Schrader? Leonard Schrader film. It came out here on Blu-ray and DVD and also came out as a VHS. I went to the site and the VHS sold out in less than 24 hours for a run of 1,500 or 2,000. All the others are still available. So that's what I was saying, Gary. You should have made the VHS version. That was a film that played to a VHS sort of standard with its look being set in the '70s.
But I couldn't even do it because it's something my distributor would have to do anyways. They have the physical and streaming distribution rights to the movie, so they say how it gets released. I don't have any say in that.
But this is before you joined up with that mob. I told you.
Well, I didn't have the money. I didn't have the money to go and self-release the movie. You know, it's one of those things where I looked in and I did the you know, I looked at how much it would cost, and I'm like, well, I'm going to be in debt if I try to print up a bunch of DVDs and Blu-rays and all that. And what it comes down to is you go, distributor comes around and be like, we'll take care of all of that. And it's like, okay, you know, and they got us on Tubi and stuff like that. The problem is that unless you can sell your movie internationally and sell certain territories and make money that way, your movie's not going to make money unless you make your movie for about $1,000 to $2,000. Like, that's really the most in this market now. And unless you have a name, the other thing is you need a name. If you don't have a name, your movie's not going to sell. People aren't going to be interested. So you got to get the guy who played Horseshack in fucking Welcome Back, Carter, to come in and do like a 5-minute part in your movie, and then you can get distributors interested. And they're like, ooh, they got fucking Horseshack in it.
You're a bit late for that. He's fucking dead. It's been a few.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah, Ron Polillo met Jesus a few years back. So.
Okay.
Same.
Well, what about the guy who played?
Just wrote it wrong,
what about
and I ran about it? He said,
he didn't write a book about it.
Horseshack is so important. Why weren't you talking about him last week?
Oh my god. He may be the number one get that I want in this show more than anybody's running rogue.
If I can find him, I don't even know where he is.
What else can we say about this one?
We got Chelsea Field, who they were still trying to push as a starlet back then in action movies. It seems to be the bulk of what she did.
Master of the Universe.
She was from Solid Gold Dancer, actually.
Oh, was she really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was from Solid Gold, and she had a role in Masters of the Universe, and then she ended up in this, and later The Last Boy Scout, and a few other films.
That's right.
And married Scott Bakula, eventually.
Did she? Oh, okay.
As we all will.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Vanessa Williams, who had, like, probably one of the most thankless roles of her career in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't
literally
tell.
Comes
like
on, that. Sings two songs, and then nags her husband, and that's it.
Yeah, she's decoration, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one who didn't get naked in the film as well was her.
Most of the women in this movie are real bitches. Just like...
Yeah.
Just like in real life.
Except the one on the motorbike in the biker club at the start. Oh man. Before she was nice.
But it's like Chelsea Field, her character's name is Virginia Slim.
Yeah.
Which I didn't quite catch in the film. Maybe they said it or something. But yeah, she's basically cheating on Don Johnson, and I guess she assumes he's cheating on her, I suppose. But you know, it's funny how negative the portrayals of women are in this film. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And also, was it just me, or did it seem like Chelsea Field and Mickey Rourke were also fucking in the movie?
Probably.
Oh yeah, probably were. You know.
She yeah.
She didn't seem too loyal to the Marlboro Man.
Yeah.
No.
Because like they're going out and having breakfast together and smiling like, and like literally her and fucking Mickey Rourke had better chemistry than her and fucking you know Don Johnson in the movie.
Well, I think the idea was probably to say that the Marlboro Man takes her for granted.
Oh, okay.
Like he just rides in town, bangs her, and then he leaves, you know, and then she sees him a month later or something.
Don Johnson probably had Melanie Griffith on set just, you know, making sure he doesn't play up, eyeballing him off like the crazy bitch she is.
Very, very likely. Who knows?
Yeah.
The other odd cameo was Robert Ginty as the helicopter pilot.
Oh, yeah, out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah, the exterminator right there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Was that him?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that film since forever. God, since what?
He had a strange career. It seemed like he was going to be a star, and then he was just kind of like a character actor or supporting guy who'd be in a movie for like 3 minutes.
Yeah, the good thing about this film is we found the one bald one with less charisma than Alec. It was Daniel.
It kind of works because like you know, the super posse is like this weird zombie type. I don't know. I thought they were invincible at first. I didn't realize those were bulletproof vests they were wearing.
Yeah, who was buying that? That was, I'm sorry, that was not buying
that. Yeah, and the other thing I didn't buy was that they would take them up till the end of the movie to figure out, oh, we got to shoot them in the head.
Exactly.
Well, that's what made me think, like, okay, are they aiming? I mean, I'm assuming they're aiming for the non-part, the naked parts of their body. I just thought that these things were like robots or something. They didn't really explain it at first.
It was a way to update the Invincible Posse in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Right.
If you remember, they come in and they're like the Riders of Terror or whatever. And, you know that the heroes are not going to be able to outshoot them. And
it's about really the only good stuff in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Extraordinarily overrated film from that era. But yeah, it's like there's also Julius Harris is like the club owner, the old man club owner, which is kind of a an old trope these days in this type of film. And he was the claw guy in Live and Let Die.
Yeah. And he shows up in like blaxploitation movies like Trouble Man and stuff like that.
He's the guy you go to when Scatman Crothers is dead. You go to that guy, obviously.
Yeah, it would have been Scatman Crothers' part to lose if he was alive.
Yeah. Which I like Scatman Crothers. He makes me laugh, that guy.
He's terrific. Great, great character actor. Terrific voice voice work on cartoons and everything.
Yeah, Hong Kong Phooey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my favorite Scatman Crothers part is Papa Bird in Black Belt Jones.
Oh my gosh!
I love that film.
Basically, almost identical to the role for Julius Harris in this.
Pretty much, yeah.
Kind of the old man who has to take the fall for revenge.
Yeah, pretty much. But the thing I didn't like about this was that Mickey Rourke just happens to be there. He just happens to just turn up. You know, he manages to find Marlboro Man at this bar. There's no. You know, guarantee he's going to be at that bar at the start. Actually, that part at the start in the Indian bar, I really enjoyed that a lot. That was quite funny. But
yeah, because it was a white guy beating up Indian. That's why you enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, old Branscombe Richmond. That's to take the hits. He gets beaten up by Seagal in a movie. He gets beaten up by Chuck Norris. So it's his turn to get beat up by Mickey Rourke.
What's funny is that the Indian's dog, Hoogie, was cut out of the film.
I was just going to say, there's only one person missing from that scene, isn't there, Garo? Yeah. Depending on who he is on the day, I guess it's wheel of ethnicity. He spins a wheel and sees what he is that day. Either way, this would have upset
whatever's more oppressed. That day in the newspaper.
On that day on Twitter. Whatever's trending on Twitter that day, he's fucking fat, stupid idiot. But Mickey Rourke just turning up, he always just happens to be there. It's also later on in the film when Don Johnson goes to see Chelsea Field. You know, he goes to see her and she's with her new man. And this is after they've been on a train. Don Johnson jumps off and who knows where the fuck he's gone in the whole country. But Harley Davidson just rolls right up at that moment at night at the house. You know, there's what do they call it? Is it circumstance, the word? There's that. And it's just complete bullshit. And that's just bullshit right there. Yeah, you can't tell me he knew exactly where to find him at that hour on that day. He could have gone anywhere, but yeah, he just happened to
be there. Well, you didn't know it's the future and everyone has telepathy.
Yeah.
So they know, they can sense where each other is.
Yeah.
Imagine it predicted telepathy instead of smartphones, and that's something.
But it's also got a half-decent cast of guys there, like you were saying, Giancarlo Esposito. Who's much older in real life than what he really is. I didn't know that. He was like 40-something when he did The Right Thing.
He's been around a long time.
Was he in stuff in the 80s or early 80s at all?
I'm trying to remember where I first saw him. Seems like I
first saw him. Do The Right Thing. I think that's the first thing I saw him in.
Someone he was a singer for the Electric Company, the PBS kids show. He sings the theme song.
Shit. Yes. Is that the Spider-Man one?
Spider-Man was on there? The one with Spider-Man. I'm looking at his... he goes way back. He goes way back to Guiding Light.
He was on 3 episodes of Miami Vice.
There you go. Ah. That was probably a Don Johnson connection there. He's an extra in The Changeling. He's in Taps.
He was in the Brother from Another Planet in the Cotton Club. He was in Trading Bright Places.
Yeah, he's a cellmate.
Yep.
Oh, Taps. Shit. Okay, so he has been around.
A long time. God, 3 different roles on Miami Vice. That's going to be fun to revisit.
Not that Don Johnson would have remembered it. He'd be like, "You look familiar. I just can't place you. Were you around seasons 2 to 5? Because I don't remember those seasons too much."
Well, apparently this, I think, started out as a Don Johnson vehicle because there was an attempt to bring in his pals to fill in roles in this. And I'm sure you could probably start connecting the dots on other Miami Vice guest actors in this movie. And it looks like it was supposed to be his project from the beginning. And again, he and Mickey Rourke kind of have that thing in common where they turned down all these things that would have made them huge movie stars. Like Mickey Rourke turned down Pulp Fiction. They both turned down Die Hard. They both turned down The Untouchables, the De Palma Untouchables. It's like,
oh my God.
Yeah. It's like they both got kind of the same history. Although Don Johnson at least was the highest paid guy on television in the 80s. So he made money from that. Yeah, and Nash Bridges was huge. So
Mickey Rourke had a pretty hot streak, you know, sort of mid to late 80s, sort of early
90s. He burned it. He just screwed himself.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
So bad.
And then when he got the wrestler and he was hot again, he kind of ruined it all again.
He would keep ruining. He had more comebacks in the 00s than any other actor. It's like every couple of years, Mickey Rourke's comeback role.
And the Expendables as well. I liked him in that.
Yeah. He only worked like 2 days on that film. And but like Sin City was a comeback role. The wrestler. Right. There was a couple of others. He would always have that kind of comeback role, and then he'd end up in a bunch of straight-to-video crap.
Even though it's a role, I remember that Once Upon a Time in Mexico was treated as a comeback for him.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, it was
2 years in Sin City.
I remember after he did The Wrestler, he did a really shitty movie with, like, what was her name from the Transformers movies?
Megan
Fox and Bill Murray. It was like this movie where I think she was, like, an angel and Bill Murray was like a mob boss. It was kind of like I guess like an angel version of Mad Dog and Glory but bad,
right?
yeah.
What, this is the most whacked out thing I've heard of in a while. I didn't even know Mickey Rourke did a movie with Bill Murray and Megan Fox. Jeez, that's a movie from hell. Domino was a comeback movie. It was always, every couple of years, there was the Mickey Rourke comeback movie. Stuntman Mike, the role in Death Proof that went to Kurt Russell, was originally written for Mickey Rourke.
Oh, Jesus.
He was the first choice, and AJ Benza has a funny story that I don't really want to repeat on this show, on his podcast, about what screwed up Mickey for the part and got him blacklisted for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard AJ Benza at all.
It's an acquired taste.
Okay.
We'll just leave it at that. It's acquired. You know, you listen to it once, you don't like it, you might not want to listen again.
He sure gets a lot of free press on this bloody show.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's kind of a go-to. It's the only way I keep up with pop culture because I don't really follow stuff. I don't read Entertainment Weekly or, you know, there's no sites to go to like Ain't It Cool or Dark Horizons that I really want to bother with to keep up with anything. And Ain't It Cool has become a graveyard because they're all like sex perverts.
Fat rapists.
Yeah, fat rapists. Fat rapists. They're either fat rapists or they write Doctor Strange. I don't know what the hell goes on there.
That and their website is stuck in 1998.
Oh, yeah. It needs dancing hamsters, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what also happened is like the websites of like Hollywood Reporter and Variety just became Ain't It Cool, became, you know, Doctor
They got
Rise.
All the scoops. Right. Yeah. They just get all the scoops because they became web savvy, and Ain't It Cool and Dark Horizons took advantage of the fact that those sites back then were not very web savvy at all. Like, but now you can just keep up with Variety and Hollywood Reporter. You know what's going on. And of course, it's nothing because everything's garbage. But
and the other thing that made those websites like popular was, remember, they had people going to like early screenings of the movies and writing reviews of the test screenings. And that stopped altogether. And what's the reason for those to exist without those test screening reviews? You know, your website's worthless if you don't have those.
I've noticed the trend with film journalism starting this summer, and the trend seems to be when a movie comes out and makes more than they expected, it's declared a hit right away. But then they just seem to not even advertise that the next week it drops like a stone. And they don't also tell you that it has to make like such and such X amount of dollars, like $500 million, to just break even. And it's, of course, in this time, it's never going to make 500. Exactly. Like, Black Widow's not going to make 500 million.
No.
Jungle Cruise is not going to make 500 million. You know, and the studios are not in the business of breaking even. So everything's just
going to fall. It's all about feeding the streaming channels now. It doesn't even matter because, you know, you can take something like The Jungle Cruise, cost $200 million, and you could skip theaters, put it on the streaming service because you're getting, what do they have, like 60 million people paying like $10 a month, you know? So that's like $600 million right there pays for The Jungle Book or Jungle Cruise, whatever the fuck it's called, you know? So, and they still have $400 million left over. So the streaming thing is where it's all ending up. Movie theaters are dying because during the pandemic, people so used to getting AAA movies at home streaming, and it's fucked people in the head, and they're not going to want to go to movies anymore. That's how it comes. That's what
I've got my own cinema here. I can just fucking get the film and just watch it upstairs, and I've got the whole setup. So there's no need for me to go to the theaters anymore.
Cinemas are going to be bowling alleys. Like, they'll still exist, but, you know, not everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, like, you don't even have to have the streaming service. If you know how to use fucking BitTorrent, you got a perfect 4K version of the movie, you know, you can download in, like, 10 minutes.
Not that we endorse BitTorrent here, of course. We don't. No, no. No endorsing
BitTorrent. Arrow, advertising for BitTorrents on our podcast. Yeah.
So don't go to the Pirate Bay. Don't go to, what's the other one? Yiffy, whatever it's called. No, don't go to those. No.
Don't go to rarbg.to where we may or may not have gotten the copy of Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man that was watched for this episode. Don't go there. Yeah. Don't do it.
Don't do it. No.
It's illegal. You will go to jail.
I should note I sold off my Snapcase DVD years ago. So,
of what? Harley Davidson.
Of Harley Davidson and Marlboro Man. I used to have it on DVD because it was a $5 staple. So I think I grabbed it one day when it was $3 at a Circuit City that was going out of business.
Yeah.
Don't feel too bad. It probably looks like shit now.
No, it's actually. It's unwatchable. If that's the MGM one, that's the one I was watching today. I bought it back in 2001 when it came out. So no, looks actually pretty good. I was actually debating whether to buy to upgrade to the Blu-ray of this, but after I watched the film, I said, nah, this will be fine. It's not going to look that much better on Blu-ray. And I read the review on Blu-ray Review or Blu-ray.com, and it was only average picture-wise, so I won't bother upgrading.
It's got very good film stock on it. It doesn't have a sharp look to it or a good look to it. I don't think it ever looked good. A lot of stuff from the 90s has that kind of cheap look.
I'm actually surprised it wasn't filmed in scope.
It all kind of looks like Renegade, the TV show, most 90s action movies. Yeah.
Oh my God! I saw Congo, a movie I hadn't seen since the theater. How cheap does that thing look? Sound stages and stuff. Oh my God! I couldn't believe it.
Really?
It's like this kind of almost big studio follow up to like Jurassic Park, which was a huge hit and was expensive as shit. And then Congo just looks like they shot it on I don't know. Looks like Roger Corman type stuff. It's really bad.
Anyway, I have to ask now that Garrow's here, and I promise, John, this will be the last time ever, okay? Ever. I'll do this. Until it comes out. Garrow, I've got to ask you. Rob Zombie's The Monsters. What are your thoughts? We've all spoken about it.
I know we have to do it. I know we have to. Yeah. And I know it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be fucking torture. You know, do I think he can make a good movie? No, because he hasn't done it at all so far. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a fucking train wreck. I think it's probably going to go straight to Peacock. It's not even going to hit theaters. You're going to be like, wow, this is really bad. No. We just feel that COVID is still around. So we're going to throw it on the Peacock, the Monsters movie.
We'll offer $10 million for it, and then they'll put us off the Hulu.
They're apparently building Mockingbird Lane from the ground up at some vacant lot somewhere. At least that's what he says on Instagram.
Really?
So there must be.
Oh, yeah, it's like in Bulgaria or something. It's in.
Oh, my God.
Why not? It's like you can't even use like the classic Universal backlot for this. You know, you're going to have to go do it in Eastern Europe like a Seagal movie.
You'd probably have to ADR the shit out of it if you did use the original lot. Just because there's tours and stuff and the tourists. And I was watching Psycho 3 the other day, and they shot that on the lot. And I swear to God, there must have been major sound problems, like the tram coming through all the time, because the whole movie is ADR, the entire thing.
Eric, I remember you talking about the Psycho sequels on one of the episodes that you were on while I was away, and about... Yeah, we've got to do those sequels, all of us.
I'm down, yeah.
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 Those are good movies, surprisingly. They're good movies.
Yeah.
I like them.
Okay, yeah. I'll say my thoughts.
I understand, like, there's stuff I don't like about them. There's myth tampering and stuff. But I think, honestly, Psycho 2 has no business being as good as it actually is. It could have gone way worse than it was.
Mm. Yeah. I will say I like I do like Mother in Part 3, where she's got that curly blonde hair like William Catt from The Greatest American Hero.
Yeah, I like Part 3 too.
Yeah, I didn't say I liked it, I just said I liked Mother in it.
It really peaked with the remake.
Oh, God. I saw that in the theaters.
Yeah.
I saw it in theaters. It was, yeah.
Who would think to replace Faye Anthony Perkins with, like, macho Vince Vaughn?
But he did have lip liner on in the whole film.
Oh, did they? I've heard it was dreadful, but
it's not good. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, that was during that time where Hollywood didn't know what to do with Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, because he did Swingers, and they were like, "What are we going to do with this guy?" So
yeah, then he did like a bunch of dramas and Jurassic World, and you know, and Psycho, and it was like it wasn't until Old School where people were like, "Oh yeah, he's funny." You know, and then he just started doing more comedy after that.
He was actually funny.
After Swingers, I liked Clay Pigeons. But that was pretty good.
I never saw that one.
I saw it when it came out. Can't remember it.
The two ones actually.
Yeah, I have no memory of it. I think I rented it on VHS so long ago.
To know Vince Vaughn's funny, watch him in Swingers and watch him especially in Maid. The other one,
yeah,
with John Favreau.
I think Maid's better than Swingers.
Yeah, I think
Maid
so,
was
yeah.
his comeback movie, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a shame those two didn't do more films together because they were actually very funny, him and Jon Favreau. They just seemed to click really well. But that's another thing I meant to ask you boys. Had this film been some sort of a hit, could they have carried on this story and done a part two, but with another name, but still the two characters of Mickey Rourke and Don Johnson?
I think the best way to handle that would have been have the two characters again, as you said, and just in a different, completely different scenario in this world.
Yeah.
Just world, basically.
Yeah. Just have moved on to sort of like Texas or someplace like that.
Chicago or New York and have like a big city caper with actual tall buildings instead of the, you know, warehouses and windmills that we see in this.
Hey, Gary, there's an idea for a film. Shit. So Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man go to Chicago and they're cracking down on illegal bathhouses there.
Oh man, that would be a great movie.
All of a sudden they lead into Garo jokes.
You know, they run into like you know Ari Emanuel and fucking Obama blowing each other. It'd be great. It would be a fantastic movie. I'd see that.
Very story. I still can't get over the fact, and I still don't believe it, that there's an Obama fried chicken somewhere in the world. Where was it?
Yeah, there was one in New York, closed down, of course. And then in China, they have Obama, or they had Obama fried chicken at one point.
I thought that was just a meme.
So did I.
No, there was one in New York, From what I understand, it was probably someplace that was struggling, and they decided to change their name to Obama Fried Chicken after Obama got elected, but it didn't help. No one went to go eat the chicken. And then what happened was, in China, there was a string of Obama Fried Chickens there.
There is an Obama platter at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles out here in Los Angeles.
Is it just a plate full of sausages?
Sausages with mushrooms shoved on the end of them.
Yep. In a cream sauce. With light cream sauce.
Obama platter. Oh, God. It's got its donuts for the dessert. Oh, my God.
Let's see. Edit point 5, Garo Obama. It's gay jokes.
Oh, you're going to edit this episode. Oh, thanks. I can't be bothered.
Lots of laughing. First edit, it'll take 8 months.
Yeah.
The Harley Davidson, the Marlboro Man episode is on the way, I promise.
Yeah, it'd be like the Planet of the Apes one from 10 years ago. I was like, oh, it's coming out. Where the fuck's the Apes episode, Stuart? Oh, it's coming. Don't worry, it's coming.
Oh, yeah. Just be happy we didn't do New Jack City or what was the other one? Menace to Society. Just be happy.
Yeah.
Should have done Death by Temptation. Directed by James Bond III. Because I found out he lives like an hour away from here.
He made
one movie, and now he just does like film festivals in the Midwest.
Who's that?
James Bond? The first black filmmaker for Troma. How does that feel like? Oh, it feels like, you know, I really broke new ground because I was the first like black guy to not get paid by Lloyd Kaufman. It was really good.
Exactly. Totally ripped off. He had to move to Colorado. Didn't Lloyd Kaufman want Dangerous People?
Yeah, they knocked on the door and they were interested in Dangerous People, but I was not interested.
You knew better. You didn't want to be a doorstopper for the bankruptcy sale that they do every year. We're going, please buy one, please.
Yeah, not gonna have that. No, I'd never see, like, at least with my distributor, I get quarterly checks, you know. So the movie does bring in money. I would not have seen a dime from Troma. No one sees a dime from Troma. Trey Parker and Matt Stone probably don't even see a dime from Troma for Cape Cannibal the musical.
Really?
Yeah, they were smart to never send anything else to him.
Hang on. So when Lloyd Kaufman directs films, he makes money from the Toxic Avenger ones. But when it's other people, they don't get shit. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't. I've never heard of anyone getting paid from Troma. Never. I've never heard of it.
He's run that scam for decades.
Obama having sex with a woman is more believable than a filmmaker getting paid from Troma.
Hang on, what about if Obama is having sex with Michelle and she's a woman? Can you believe that?
She's not a woman.
Can't wait for that.
Not a woman. Let's be honest here.
Well, he did slip up and say Michael. I mean, you don't get your wife's name wrong.
Called Michelle Obama Michael Obama many times, not just one slip up.
Oh, was it? I thought it was just
many
the once.
Oh, yeah. It was many times.
Oh,
many
boy.
Times.
Where is that jerk anyway these days? Is he still around?
Yeah, I read something where they're talking about they want to lock down everything again. Like, supposedly they're going to announce a big lockdown for like the second week of August, you know, and all the blue states are aborted. And Obama's going to be on like Martha's Vineyard having a big 60th birthday party. You know, probably no one's wearing masks because, you know, politicians, you know, it's really not about COVID. It's all about control. So, you know, Obama can be on Martha's Vineyard, you know, celebrating his 60th and getting blown by some dude in a closet, you know, while everyone's partying, you know, but us plebs have to go out and wear masks, you know, and, you know, listen to what the government says, you know, because they know best for us, you know.
So are they enforcing fines on people not wearing masks or not?
They've been threatened for that, but it's never happened.
I live in Florida. DeSantis won't let that happen.
Okay. Eric, you were saying your friends got done. They got busted, did they?
No. I thankfully not. I no. They have been threatening for over a year now, but they have not pulled the trigger because they know it's going to be wildly unpopular.
See, they do it here, but nobody pays. They just say, your fund's illegitimate, so we're not paying it.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, definitely. No way.
Yep, they got it rough in Sydney at the moment. They're locked down for the next few months, it looks like. They're fucked. You got that many cases. Well, not that many cases, not like India had, but enough to lock them down for God knows how long.
But you have to admit, it would be funny if all of the South Sydney Rabbitohs all caught COVID. That'd be pretty funny.
Oh, they've been, not that team, but other teams have been breaking protocols and nearly put the entire league into disarray where they had to have cancelled the rest of the year. And, stupid bastards in hotel quarantine, but then they're out passing shit to each other on balconies and, dumbos.
I heard the true tragedy of COVID in Australia is that...
Okay, yeah, I'm going to get that.
Edit point.
Oh, that, yeah. 69 minutes in, I thought, there's other shit I can get away with that. I've got to cut that. Otherwise, I'm fucked. But any more final thoughts on this film, guys? Seems to be sort of like a lukewarm response to it. I mean, I'd seen it numerous times before in the past. Don't know about the rest of yours.
I enjoy watching it every few years. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's fine. I think it was mismarketed. It's very popular in home video. It does have a cult following among people in Gen X. And I don't think it's bad at all, really. I think it's more fun than people give it credit for.
Do you think it's more fun than a Lethal Weapon film? I did.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It does have not aged well for me at all. No. I hate them now, and I would rather watch this.
I only recently saw the first two Lethal Weapons, and I'm stunned by how bad they are.
Wait till you get to part three.
Oh.
I don't want to go there. I'm not even going to bother. I mean, I my whole life I heard either the first or the second one in terms of like for supremacy as which is the best one, and I've seen both, and they're both fucking terrible.
No, I
gotta go. You gotta watch part three.
I'm with Garrow. I saw part three in the theaters, and it was just jaw-droppingly bad. It was unbelievable.
We had to watch it, so you gotta. That's the way it works.
Fair enough.
Be warned, it is bad, especially with Mel Gibson and what's her name, Rene Russo, just trading. The scars they got in their bodies. It's just there was the fucking dumbest scene out there. Oh, I got this cut back in 1981. Oh, I got this scar from. Who cares?
Yeah, Joe Pesci is so annoying in the second one.
Yeah, he's just. I don't like that second one at all.
Did anybody actually think that was funny back then? I don't get it.
No.
You know, on the TV show, you know who played that character?
Who? Mm.
Yeah, it's with Thomas Lennon from The State and Reno 911.
Really?
Yeah, he played Leo Getz on the
TV show. I think I did watch. I think I watched the TV show.
Character they needed to reboot and include.
Yeah, not at all. The funny thing is the original Warren Murphy, Shane Black script for Lethal Weapon 2, which was barely used in what they filmed, originally it was a gay hairdresser that they were protecting, and he had a crush on Riggs.
Oh, boy.
That's kind of funny.
I wish Devin Murphy would send me a copy of his dad's script, because it's like I want to read it, but that's what I had heard, is there was a gay hairdresser who had a crush on Riggs.
You know, Mel nicks that idea real quick.
It's like, that's I think he might have been down with it. Who knows? Because that was around the time he was getting that bad press with the gay, activist types.
Would have been funnier if he had a crush on Murtaugh.
Yeah,
or had a crush on Joe Pesci.
What would have been great is just hearing Richard Donner just screaming at Mel Gibson, going, "Will you please stop improvising the word fag into every single scene?"
Oh, Gibson told a really off-color joke. I can't say it on the show. I'll say it after the recording on the set of Bloodfather. I work with somebody whose dad was the DP on that. And, Gibson. Oh, shit.
Yeah. He would be a full-on guy. I mean, he wouldn't be full-on for me because of his Australian upbringing. It's just normal for us. But for Americans, he'd be classed as full-on.
Yeah. We need to get him on the show.
Oh, I wish. Get Mel on. Get Mel on when he's angry and drunk. It'd be just... he'd just sit back and let him go.
It'd be awesome. Don't get him when he's doing the anti-aging stuff like he did on Rogan's show.
Did you ever see... did you see that recent film of his, Fat Man?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's actually pretty good. He plays Santa Claus in the movie, and he plays like the most intense Santa Claus like ever in movies. And it's actually a pretty decent movie. It's actually a lot of fun. I liked it better than the Joe Carnahan movie where he plays the villain in it. What is that called? I can't remember it. It wasn't a good
Joe
movie.
Joe Carnahan's latest piece of shit.
Yeah, but Mel Gibson. Yeah, Mel Gibson plays the villain in it, and it's not that good. Fat Man was way better. It's that one's worth watching.
You know that things are bad when people are praising a movie where Liam Neeson punches cartoon wolves. Hey, it's Joe Carnahan's latest movie.
And the weird thing is he doesn't punch a wolf in the goddamn movie. Never happens.
Yeah.
He cuts black before he fights those wolves at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Okay, I've just seen it. Eric, I've just seen it. Three wings, waffle or potatoes, salt or french fries, the Obama special.
That's what they serve at Roscoe's.
Yeah. You know, last night I was watching the Match Game on television, the reboot, the one with Alec Baldwin as the host, and it's god-awful. It's so bad. And I was watching it with my wife and one of my sons. And I said, I guarantee you, give this sometime before the end of the show, he'll bring up Trump. And we got to the last question, and the question was all about Trump. And all the panelists in there, such and such kissed a blank and got Donald Trump. And then that was just the cue for them to put in whatever. One guy put kissed a bigoted racist orange or something. It's just, I said, see what I mean? They're jamming the politics in these fucking game shows. You don't need to. But it was, Alec Baldwin couldn't help himself.
Yeah, game show, politics and game shows is pretty iffy no matter on what side of the aisle you're on. Which of the Baldwin boys, is it Daniel who's in this movie? Is he the conservative? Who's the conservative?
No, Steven.
Steven
Baldwin, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Him and Alec do not get along, apparently. Yeah.
To be fair to Steven, no one really gets along with Alec Baldwin, it seems.
No.
Because he seems to be getting into fights with everybody.
Well, he just went through the biggest embarrassment possible just this past year with his wife pretending to be Spanish, but it turned out she wasn't, and it turns out she comes from a family who was just obsessed with Spain, and she's been – anytime she's on camera, she pretends to have an accent. The whole thing is cringe as fuck.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Look this up. It is weird. I've noticed he has been pretty I just haven't seen a lot from the Baldwins lately, and I wonder if it's because of that. Just a pure embarrassment.
Fun fact, I actually got blocked by Alec Baldwin on Twitter many, many years ago.
Ah, badge of honor.
Really. Yeah, it was. What happened was...
You and Super Mexican.
Yeah, what happened was Alec Baldwin put out a picture of his wife, she like lying in bed next to him, and he took a photo of her. And on the tweet, he put, woke up next to this. And I sent it to Super Mexican. I said, do something with this. He sent me the picture back with the Super Mexican mask on it. And I tweeted it to Alec Baldwin and got blocked. So
coincidentally, a friend of mine ran into Daniel Baldwin in Vegas the other night and took a photo with him. And he's the Baldwin in this. So it's pretty funny. The odd thing is, Daniel looks exactly the same. I guess he's dyeing his hair black or something, but he looks the
same.
It's
funny you mention it because I ran into Tia Carrera in Vegas, like probably just shortly after True Lies. I was a little kid, and we were waiting in line to get somewhere. I guess it was a restaurant. I have no idea what it was, but she was dressed for a night on the town. She was there with her group of friends. And my dad, having no tact, went up to her and said, "Hey, aren't you the bad girl from True Lies?" And she looked vaguely annoyed by that he didn't know her name. And she just kind of looked down at me, and I guess she saw a little kid, so she smiled and wasn't pissy about it. And she was like, "Yeah, that was me." So that's my one Tia Carrera story.
You saw her in her prime when you were a little kid.
True. This has got to be that Vegas trip was 98, I want to say. So maybe not shortly after True Lies, but 4 years, give or take.
Yeah, and she was definitely at her best in Wayne's World and True Lies. Certainly better than the hermaphrodite that was the lead in the film.
Hey, anyone going to go see Halloween Kills? I'm not.
Nope. Absolutely not.
Nope. No way. Nope.
I fucking despise the last one, so I was like, nah.
Yeah, I'll wait till it's free on streaming, and even then I'll probably watch 20 minutes of it and shut it off. This one looks terrible, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I got an AMC A-list, so I have nothing to do. I'll probably see it. It doesn't cost me a damn thing.
They seem to really be pushing the him killing firemen segment. It's almost as if maybe that's all they have that's any good. I don't know. It's weird. It's all over the trailers. Like, is this? I'm sure this counts as like 15 seconds of the movie, and yet I'm seeing it all over the trailers. Every TV spot has it. It's weird.
I haven't even seen the trailer.
The only way they'd get me to see it is if Tony Moran came back as Michael Myers and was calling everybody a bunch of fucking losers through the whole film. Like Michael finally talked, and it's just Tony Moran, you fucking losers.
Yeah.
You suck my cock, you fucking loser. I'd go see that.
That video's nuts.
And, if Michael exposes who really molested his sister on Happy Days, that'd be worth watching then.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the only way to get me to watch it. Garbage. But yeah, they don't know how to make any of that stuff anymore. They do the Rob Zombie approach, make everything like an action movie. So yeah. Horror is like an action film. Unless it's made for like 12-year-old girls, then it's made like a horror film.
That last one had the footprints of Rob Zombie more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. He seemed to inspire it more than anything.
I actually disagree. I think it had the footprints of the Dimension stuff, especially Halloween 6. They had the aesthetic look of Halloween 6 more than anything to me.
I never saw. That's the only sequel I never saw, so I'm not sure. God.
I barely remember it except Paul Rudd was in it. That's all I remember.
I mean, it's a half-decent film. They really tried with the story, but I mean, I enjoy 6 more than I do 5. 5 is just atrocious. And
I stopped after 5. That's the one where the only thing I remember is the big-tittied girl has that weird T-shirt of the cops do it right or something like
that's
that.
On, so that's on part 4. Well, I remember that.
Is that before? Oh, okay.
That's number 4.
So it's like Kathleen Kinmont?
Kinmont, yeah.
Hell yeah. It's
okay, that's part 4, yeah.
Yeah, it's so strange because her father is a policeman in the movie, and here she is wearing nothing besides that shirt that says, cops do it by the book. And it's just like, this is really odd and incestuous.
Not that anybody really read what was on the T-shirt. I don't think they gave a shit either.
Well, I was staring at that general vicinity, so I read the T-shirt.
Yeah. But yeah, Halloween 5 is just terrible. Especially the worst part is when Michael picks up the woman. She thinks it's her date because Michael's wearing a Frankenstein mask. So Michael's wearing a Frankenstein mask over a Halloween mask. And number one, how did Michael learn how to drive? All right. Number two.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, that's all right. And also the other part is, if he's killing teenagers, why is he in a car driving with her? It's the same logic as Friday the 13th, the remake, when Jason has the woman as the prisoner in his dungeon for weeks on end. It makes no fucking sense.
Well, he drives the car at the first Halloween to escape the hospital, but supposedly the novelization...
Don't justify this shit film, John!
No, the novelization explains that apparently somebody, makes no sense, but somebody at the mental hospital was giving him driving lessons or something.
I'll tell you what...
None of it makes any sense.
I'll tell you what, you mentioned the novelization. If you can track down the novels or the audiobook readings of the novels of Halloween 1 and 2, they are a good read. They are good, but
I've heard they're really good.
I got the first one by Curtis Richards, which is somewhere. I think it's in my bookcase somewhere. But that's a really good book. I haven't read it for years. And Halloween 2 I've got, but on an audio book. But they're really good.
Are they hard to track?
Yeah, they're not easy. But actually, I'll tell you what. There's an audio book channel called Audiobooks for the Damned on YouTube. And it's the novelizations of films, but read by, you know, just everyday people. But they read through the whole thing. So it's, you know, 7 hours or 8 hours or whatever it is, the length of the actual book. And Halloween 1 and 2 are on there. So you can listen to them, but it's sort of jarring because you hear the person, you can hear them turn the pages as they go along. But if you can get over that, it's not a professional one done, say, in an Audible studio or whatever. But
yeah, no, I get you. I just subscribed. Yeah, cool.
And the one you should hunt down is the novelization of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, read by Barack Obama. It's really good.
Yeah, I actually heard the part where his voice gets really, really high pitched and excited during the leather bar scene.
Yeah, it's an excellent. Like, there was always this guy, this British guy who read the Harry Potter books, but all these Harry Potter faggots would like be like, "It's really good. It's even better than reading the book yourself." But I'm telling you, Barack Obama reading the novelization of Freddy's Revenge.
Yeah,
they got the Ninja Turtles audiobook, the movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think they've got Mad Max and Escape from New York, which are two novelizations I wish I'd grabbed when I was young.
They got Terminator 2 as well.
Yeah, I don't even know the last time they updated anything. They would always be stagnant for months, and then something would trickle through. Then I couldn't even tell you the last thing they updated on. But there's some good ones on there. Actually, Eric, I think I've got Halloween 1 and 2 as audio books. I'll send them to you. I've got them on MP3s. I think I downloaded them. Oh,
appreciate that. Yeah. What are they? I guess they're tapes or CDs. What are they?
No, they're just the ones from this site, but they're actually got.
Oh, okay. MP3. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do.
Yeah, we'll do. And I think they may even have Halloween 3 on there, the Season of the Witch one, which I do want to read that. That's or cool. Listen to.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've been for years. You won't care about this, too, but for years I've been looking for a novelization of WW and the Dixie Dance Kings, the Burt Reynolds movie. Apparently, it's really good.
What makes you think I don't like Burt Reynolds?
I've heard you on the show.
I don't like him. I don't care much.
Yeah, he don't like the Burt. He don't like Chevy Chase. There's a few of them.
Oh no! Hang on. Chevy Chase.
You like Fletch? You like Fletch, right? Oh no, you didn't like Fletch. That's
no,
right.
I didn't care. That one. I don't even know if I did. Yeah, I did the Fletch episode. I didn't care much.
You did.
Yeah, I did. The one I do like of Chevy Chase is
Funny Farm.
No, I've got that on Blu-ray though, remarkably enough, and a double feature with Funny Farm and Spies Like Us. Uh-huh. Foul Play. That's the one I like the most of Chevy Chase.
Foul Play with Goldie Hawn. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I do like that a lot. With the albino, or albino, whatever you say. As the bad guy.
Right.
And Vacation. I like the Vacation and European Vacation.
Yeah, I grew up with those movies, so whether they're bad, I it's hard for me to gauge. They're just kind of entrenched in my, you know. My dad likes them, so whatever my dad thought was funny when I was a kid, I really like those. Like, I feel the same way about The Great Outdoors. Ever seen that?
Oh, John Candy.
Yeah, it's probably not very good, but I enjoy it.
A lot of those 80s films tend to get a lot of love more than they really should. There's a lot of retro love for 80s films more than anything.
So many 80s classics, quote-unquote, are overrated, and a lot of them are not very good at all. Yeah,
like,
come to realize.
For instance, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I didn't care for it. And yet it seems to be universally loved. I thought, it doesn't do much for me. I don't really care.
No, a lot of those John Hughes movies don't do much for me. I used to work at a theater, at a revival theater, and we screened Kelly LeBrock, what is it? Weird Science.
Weird Science, yeah.
Never seen it before. I sat down and I watched the movie. The first 45 minutes were unwatchable to me. And then it finally started getting okay towards the end. But, yeah, a lot of that stuff doesn't work for me.
That film was driven by her and her looks alone. That was it. The film that Steven Seagal found her and said, I want some of that. I want that. Give me that.
I think he was going to be her bodyguard, or he was hired to be security for her in Japan or something. That's how the legend goes.
Yeah, he made sure he divorced his first Japanese wife first, then got the gig, and then said, you know, I'm single, right?
They have the audiobook of Every Which Way But Loose.
Do they really? Okay.
Yes, they do.
It's very cool. That, I think I raised this before in the past, or John may have raised it. The novelizations of films these days, apart from credit to the NES, he turned me on to the audiobook for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I've just downloaded the other day, read by Jennifer Jason Leigh. But the novelizations of films these days seems to be a dead format. It's a non-existent.
Yeah, definitely. Did you like the film, Hollywood?
Yes, I very much. Yeah.
Okay, I'd be very interested to hear what, because I read it already. What you think about the book when you read it? I'll keep my, I will keep my opinion to it until maybe we can do a show on it. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Because for me, I listen to audiobooks on the road at work, obviously. So I've got plenty of time on the road, and that's when I get my best chance to listen to them. But it was, yeah, Nesbitt was saying that it's a really good, he read it. He listened to the audiobook. He goes, yeah, it's a really good read. He really enjoyed the book, and he turned me on to it. So that's what I said to him, is there an audiobook version? He goes, yeah, there is, with Jennifer Jason Leigh reading it. I thought, okay, I'll track it down, and found it pretty easy on places that Garrow mentioned before that I shouldn't be advocating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think if you could sell it as a young adult book or young adult fiction, then you'll see a novelization of a movie, and almost everything is PG-13 these days, so it's not hard to do.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Because that's the big market for books now, sadly, is young adult fiction. Yeah, blame Harry Potter, I guess.
Do people even read books anymore, or what?
No,
it doesn't seem like they do.
They don't, but, you know, I was very surprised the other day. I feel like we live in a bigger reading culture than we did when I was a kid. Actually, I could be completely wrong on that. But yesterday I was at a Target, and I went to the DVD Blu-ray section just to see what they had. It's usually going to be
nothing.
Stuff I wouldn't touch. Yeah, exactly. Nothing. Correct. Yeah. This time it was literally nothing. The entire Blu-ray section had been turned into bookshelves, believe it or not.
Oh.
Yeah, nothing I would touch with a 10-foot pole either, because it was all just like romance novels of the day and stuff like that. It's just like stupid shit.
Yeah.
I think I saw Garrow's Favorite President on a cover fairly yesterday, actually.
Yeah, political books are still big sellers, yeah, for a sad reason.
Was it a copy of Blue Boy magazine?
Hard leather magazine with a yeah.
Yeah, so I was taken aback. I was like, holy shit, there's no DVDs, no Blu-rays. It's all books. And I thought it was, is there a bigger reading culture? And I think there is.
There could be.
There is among women. And black women also have books marketed to them. There's the urban romance is a big genre.
I did see a lot of those. I also saw something that might have been the closest thing I would pick up, but I wouldn't touch that either. The James Patterson version of The Shadow. Oh, my God, that looks terrible.
Oh, it's getting trashed on the shadow groups on Facebook.
The shadow?
One shadow group is actually banning any mention of
it. The shadow?
Yeah, they took the 30s pulp character and made him for the modern day. It looks like
ass. Oh, no. Don't say that. My favorite character of all time, The Shadow. No. Don't say that.
Oh, they've ruined it.
Let's face it, The Shadow peaked when... No, I'm sorry. I got it wrong. For a second, I thought that what's his name, the hero of all Australia, Paul Hogan, played The Shadow. But
No.
I'm sorry, I got mixed up for a second.
No, he did play the Phantom in a TV skit though many years ago. Yeah,
which was the peak of Phantom.
It was. No, it was actually a few years later when the comedian Ostentatious did the Phantom Shuffle. That was a good song. That. But, yeah, I hope The Shadow hasn't been as ruined as much as Master Universe has by crying idiot man-child Smith, because I watched a few minutes of that and, oh, shit, it's bad. It's so bad.
Well, I was thinking about, you got to make a list of how many things he was fired off of or he walked away from. Yeah, like since he broke through with Clerks, because he wrote like a $6 million man script. He wrote
Superman.
Superman. He tried to do Green Hornet. I think he walked off that project, said he couldn't.
Tried to do Fletch.
Yeah, oh, he did. Right, tried Fletch for years.
You know they're doing a Fletch movie now.
With John Hamm. Yeah,
John Hamm.
I could see that. The character's an asshole. John Hamm could probably play an asshole.
Yeah.
Could have got Alec Baldwin.
He's too fat and old, but yeah. Alec Baldwin circa Miami Blues, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I always thought Jason Lee was a good choice for the character, but then
that was an inspired casting choice by Kevin Smith.
Isn't he doing the Mallrats 2 as well, or not? How much imagining?
He talks about it, but we'll see if it happens.
Yeah, he needs to get through Clerks 3, which begins shooting tomorrow.
Oh, Jesus.
There's so much online, like, bad blood between him and what I assume is his fan following. But I don't know. It's just the negativity I've seen on that guy the last month has been pretty crazy. I'd consider his career done.
Didn't he stick a fork in the Oscooniverse years ago with one of those films? I forgot which one it was.
He was supposed to be done with all that stuff.
Yeah, but then
all the movies he made after that have been absolute fucking garbage and so bad that he could only travel around with it and show it because no distributor wanted to put it in fucking theaters. So, you know, he has to. So, yeah, Clark's Lion Gates is going to release it. It'll probably do well because people remember the first Clerks and like it. It's a good movie, but now it's like I don't trust him to make a good movie. You know, it's like I always worried about, like, because I always loved Unbreakable. I think it's M. Night Shyamalan's best movie. But then he made a bunch of shit, and I'm like, I hope he never makes a sequel to Unbreakable because he'll probably fucking ruin it. and then eventually he did make a sequel to Unbreakable and ruined it. And, you know, I have the same feeling about Kevin Smith is that I don't – because Kevin Smith now is not the Kevin Smith of the 90s. Like, the Kevin Smith of the 90s was actually kind of funny and cool and kind of had a kind of mean, funny side to him. This one is a total fag cuck, you know, the new Kevin Smith. You know, crying all the time. He seems to be having his period 24/7. All that soy eating is going right to, like, his fucking brain and shrinking his fucking testicles and turning it into, like, fucking pussy eggs or something. I mean, he's not a man anymore. He's been totally, like, changed. He's an estrogen machine now.
Pretty much. I'll tell you one thing. I've just thought about it. How about all of us gather sometime in the future with Hunter when he's back? And we do cop out.
Oh, I'm not sitting through that thing again. I'll do it strictly from memory.
No, you're not allowed. You got to sit through it again, or you're going to be sick that week. I can't make it. Crook.
I've never seen it.
I'll
go around licking doorknobs to get COVID to get out of.
I am not watching that. I can just do it from memory. That movie was terrible.
I did. I think 5 or 10 minutes, and I couldn't believe it, how bad it was.
I said, this guy never had any fucking talent. We completely overrated him from the beginning after I saw that piece of shit. I said, he had studio money. He didn't even have the brains to get a second unit guy to do action scenes because he could not direct action to save his life.
No. And Bruce Willis looks bored a lot in his films usually these days. In this one, you can tell he's just sitting there going, I need to get that fuck out of here. Him and Tracy Morgan, is it Morgan? His last guy's name, is it Morgan?
Yeah, Tracy Morgan.
No chemistry. You talk about no chemistry in between other actors, no chemistry. This is the worst.
Bruce Willis, Sean William Scott, Tracy Morgan, and it is the lowest energy film you could possibly imagine, which a movie like that should not be that low energy.
Was that his last studio movie? Because everything else was.
I think it was.
But he's done a lot of work in on TV.
True, yeah. Yeah, I just mean movie. I mean feature films. I think everything after that was GoFundMe, you know.
Stuff. Yeah, I think right after that was Red State, then all of a sudden, then he made like fucking Horrible Tusk, and then he made the horrible, but I have not seen it. Just everyone says it's horrible. Yoga Hosers.
I saw 10-15 minutes of it. I couldn't take anymore. I shut it off. It's not a movie. Yeah. What it is.
Yeah. So yeah, he's I really liked him. I really fucking liked him, and he's not the same person anymore. Kind of like with Howard Stern. I used to love fucking Howard Stern, but he's not the same person anymore. They're John Woo. He's not the same John Woo. You know, there's a lot of people who from my youth who I used to idolize who have disappointed me. You know, and definitely John Woo, Kevin Smith. You know, definitely disappointment.
What happens with heroes when they live too long? That's the problem. And they keep working. You know, they don't have the good sense to just retire. It eventually happens. It catches up with everybody.
Yeah, they just become boring, and you know they lose their edge. It's sad.
Yeah, Friedkin is kind of the only person who hasn't lost his edge.
Yeah, he's not as popular as he was, obviously, but
no, but his projects are always interesting. Like Killer Joe is not something that I would expect an old man to make.
He goes in a different direction every time. He's not afraid to do different things.
Right. Didn't he do that film Bug? Was that him?
Yeah, he did.
Bug. Hey, Gary, tell your bug story. Or was it John who was in that?
No, it was me. It was that bug story is me. I've only been to a movie twice where the audience got angry at the movie after it was over. And one of it was Lords of Salem. People were pissed at that movie for good reason, because it's fucking awful. And the other was Bug. And it was I went to go see it with my one black friend. And it was at the Revere Theater, which is now gone. It's now being turned into an Amazon, distribution center. Yeah. But mostly black people in the movie theater, because if you remember, the trailers and the commercial for the movie made it seem like it was a movie about bugs attacking people. And you go see the movie, and no, it's about a bunch of crazy ass white crackers in a hotel room thinking they're bugs. The black people were not happy about being duped into thinking they were watching a horror movie. And they were very vocal about it after the movie ended. And they were like, there's fucking balls in this movie, man. It's about a bunch of fucking bullshit, man. I'm part of motherfucking balls. Not one motherfucking bug in this goddamn movie. Just a bunch of dumb motherfucking white people. Crazy ass motherfucking crackers.
That was just Brent alone, wasn't it?
But yeah, that was their reaction to the movie was better than the actual movie. Because if you remember, just go on YouTube and look up the bug trailer or bug commercials. It makes it seem like it was a movie about killer bugs.
So, Gary, give us a real reason why you moved to Florida. Is it for the sun and the new lifestyle, or to get away from Bryn?
Get away from Brent. You know, I need a good like 1,400 miles between us. You know, he voted for Biden.
Ugh, the hell you say, really?
He voted for Biden. Yep.
That was
He's that much of an idiot that he voted for Biden.
That was the last straw. Guys, I'm heading down
and
south.
I go to him, I go, how can you even be black? You voted for a guy who was pro-segregation, who was pro-Jim Crow laws, and who wrote the 94 crime bill that put more black people in chains than slavery. How can you call yourself black by voting for Joe Biden? But, yeah.
At least he did. At least you didn't know Trump, man.
What was his response?
Nothing. He's just like, you know, because they all believe the lie that Trump is some racist, even though they all loved Trump before he ran for office. He was like in every single rap song. They all wanted to be like fucking Trump, but they believe CNN. They believe fucking ABC. They believe the bullshit that Trump is some horrible racist, even though you saw unemployment go up in black communities. You saw wages rise in black communities. You saw black people doing better under Trump than they ever did under any Democrat like fucking president. But it doesn't matter. It all comes down to the propaganda. And, you know, that segment of, you know, community is very susceptible to the propaganda. That's what it just comes down to.
You know, when doctors have this sign on their desk and it says Dr. such and such and says MDDS or whatever it is, or whatever the thing. Gary should say, Gary Negotian filmmaker NSFW. After
Well, if I ever came in here and was safe for work, everyone would be like, don't have him back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a fucking boy.
Yeah. Actually, if
people
I don't
want to hear Obama gay jokes, that's what they want.
No, they want to hear a lot of gay Obama jokes. Please, don't upset the audience.
If he didn't do this, we'd say he'd gone Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah. He'd totally be having a backwards cap on and walking his dogs.
Yeah, crying about how much I loved Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Harley Quinn Davidson would be. Harley Quinn Smith and the Marlboro Man would be.
Yeah.
That'd be his remake. You know what
Well, do you want to rate the movie? Since
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I forgot all about that. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Who goes
Eric
first?
Eric goes first.
I'm going to say I like the movie a little bit. It's definitely above average for me. It was a surprise, and any movie that surprises me is always going to be better than average. Even though I don't think the action sequences are as good as they should be. There's a lot of good-looking women in it, and again, that word, I was surprised by the setting and all that and the time it took place. I'm going to say 5.9 or just say 6. 6 for me.
So above average. That's all right.
Yeah.
All right. John?
I'll just say a 6. I enjoy it. I've always enjoyed it every time I watch it. And it's kind of like here in America we used to have TBS would run movies for guys who love movies, and this seems like the type of film that would play that that programming block, along with Roadhouse and
yep.
I don't know whatever what else they showed. Die Hard, Stone Cold, I don't know.
All right, Garrow.
I liked it better when I saw it back in 1991, which is weird. I actually saw it 1.5 times in the theater because the first time I saw it, when they're in Vegas hiding out, the film broke, and they couldn't get it back, you know, they couldn't put it back on the platter and get it working again.
Yeah.
So I actually had to come back like a couple of days later and watch the whole movie again. But I was enjoying it so much, you know, when I saw it the first time, I didn't have a problem coming back and watching the whole movie again. But I remember liking it a bit more back in 91. I still like it now, and I kind of agree with everyone. It's a 6. It's a little bit above the average. It's entertaining. I would still probably rather watch this in a theater than probably most movies coming out nowadays. It's fun. I wish it was a hit. I would actually like to see a sequel, but, you know, it was a huge bomb. But I enjoyed it. It's a 6. It's a 6. Right. You'll enjoy it. If you watch it, you'll like it.
I am going to give it a 7.5. I actually enjoyed it a little less, like Garrow, but a little less from when I first saw it, but still really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the fact that it has a lot of masculinity in the film, which you do not see these days because, you know, kind of that. You can actually see men being men, and that's always a good thing. So 7.5 from me.
Nobody ever said crap like toxic masculinity back then.
No, they didn't. And you think these two guys as well, if they were told that, they'd say, who gives a fuck? Piss off.
Yeah, exactly.
They wouldn't care. Yeah. Not like other.
Well, throw a cigarette butt in your face, you know?
Yeah.
Well, all action movies around that time were all about, were like all praising toxic masculinity. It was all about toxic masculinity. Now it's like, now they act like it's a bad thing, but you know, fuck it. Toxic masculinity.
It's a pretty red pilled film, this one, when you look at it. It is. All right. All right, man. We'll wrap it up, and I'll say good night.
Yeah. Later, everybody.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.